A blast tore through the night air outside a suburban bank on July 14, 2024. Glass shards rained on empty sidewalks. A lone ATM lay open, its cash scattered across wet pavement. No one stood guard. No alarms warned of danger. Then a single security camera blinked to life. It captured a man in a hooded jacket. He moved with purpose. He planted a device under the machine. He vanished into darkness. Hours later, local police found fragments of explosives. They found CCTV footage. Investigators traced a motorbike escape. They found a license plate. It led to one name, a man known to federal agents. He carried a history of threats and small bombs. He slipped from custody more than a year earlier. He held grudges against banks. He blamed them for broken promises and lost money. He turned belief into violence. His family mourned his loss. They lived under fear. They spoke in whispers. They begged him to stop. He ignored them. He promised retribution. He built bombs in a hidden workshop. He tested them on empty fields. He gathered materials, wires, timers, and power. Each death saved him fuel for revenge. Then a tip from a neighbor changed everything. A man matching his description walked into a rural cafe at dawn. He looked tired. He carried a duffel bag. Officers surrounded the building. They found forged papers. They found maps of bank branches. They found homemade explosives. He stood in handcuffs. He met their gaze without fear. He said nothing. He refused to explain. He carried the weight of grief. He blamed the world. This arrest closed a chapter of terror. It reopened wounds. Families of past victims cried again. They replayed images of broken glass. They heard sirens in their dreams. They questioned how one man slipped through cracks in the system. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave a comment. The next story might change your mind. Don't miss a single turn. The first phone call came at 2:19 a.m. on Sunday, July 20, 2025. Officer Maria Rodriguez of the San Ramon Police Department heard the dispatcher's voice crackle through her radio. ATM explosion. Target store on Bishop Drive. No injuries reported. She pressed the accelerator and headed toward the scene. When Rodriguez arrived, she found destruction scattered across the Target entrance. Glass from the front doors lay in sharp pieces on concrete. The ATM machine stood open, its metal shell bent outward like flower petals. Cash compartments hung empty. The air smelled of chemical residue and smoke. Store security cameras had captured fragments of what happened. At 2:15 a.m., a figure in dark clothing approached the machine. The person moved with practiced efficiency. They placed something small against the ATM's base. Then they walked away. For minutes later, the explosion ripped through the quiet shopping plaza. The blast damaged the store's eastern entrance. Wooden panels would soon cover broken windows. Yellow police tape blocked customer access. FBI agents arrived within hours. They recognized the signature immediately. This bombing matched patterns from a crime spree that had terrorized bank customers across three states. Special Agent Jennifer Chun of the FBI's Sacramento field office took control of the investigation. She had been tracking a crew of professional thieves for 8 months. They called themselves nothing. Federal prosecutors labeled them the South American Theft Group. Their methods separated them from ordinary criminals. These thieves used construction worker disguises. They carried blowtorches. They deployed cell phone jammers to disable security systems. They rented vacation properties near banks. They stole cars from black market dealers. Between May and October 2024, they had robbed more than 29 financial institutions across California, Oregon, and Washington. The crew operated like a military unit. They scouted targets for weeks. They tested security responses. They cut through walls from neighboring businesses. They spray-painted cameras black. They triggered alarms deliberately to time police response. Then they struck when conditions were perfect. At a Wells Fargo in Modesto, they had entered through a pet spa next door. Team members distracted employees while others tested wall thickness with tools. After closing time, they returned with power saws. They cut a hole large enough to crawl through. They used blowtorches to melt the ATM safe. They escaped with $247,000 in cash. In Fresno, they targeted an educational employee's credit union branch. The crew arrived wearing hard hats and yellow safety vests. They looked like city workers. They jammed cellular signals to prevent alarm systems from calling police. They broke into the ATM vault and stole more than $80,000. The pattern was always similar. Professional disguises, advanced tools, electronic countermeasures, methodical execution, then vanishing without trace. Local police departments struggled to connect the crimes. The thieves operated across multiple jurisdictions. They used fake identities. They changed vehicles constantly. FBI analysts began piecing together the crew's structure in June 2024. An attempted break-in at a Merced ATM provided the first solid clues. Surveillance footage showed distinctive clothing and tools. Computer databases matched the evidence to similar crimes throughout California. Investigators discovered the crew used a woman named Maite Silas Silva to rent vacation properties. She booked Airbnb locations in Bakersfield, Tulare, and Turlock. Security cameras at these rentals captured team members bringing in large containers and equipment bags. The gear matched items found at crime scenes. The crew relied on a Hollywood club promoter to provide stolen vehicles. One car contained an Apple AirTag tracking device. FBI agents traced its location data to multiple bank robbery sites. Phone records connected the promoter to rental agreements. Social media posts revealed travel patterns up and down the West Coast. By October 2024, federal prosecutors had identified 11 crew members. Most came from Chile. Two were from Peru and Venezuela. Their leader was Alex Moyano Morales, a 24-year-old Chilean national. Informants called him Gordito. He had multiple aliases and an outstanding immigration warrant. A grand jury issued sealed indictments on October 31, 2024. FBI agents arrested 9 suspects that week. 2 more were captured in Washington state. They faced charges of bank robbery and conspiracy to commit bank robbery. Maximum sentences ranged from 5 to 20 years in federal prison. But one crew member remained free. Court documents listed him only as John Doe 2. His real identity stayed hidden for months. He had been careful. He avoided cameras. He used aliases. He changed locations frequently. While his partner sat in jail, he continued planning robberies. Facial recognition technology eventually exposed him. FBI agents found a GoPro camera during a search of the crew's equipment. The memory card contained videos of previous heists. One file showed a man whose face matched database records. Diego Ananias Arellano Diaz, age unknown, Chilean national. Diaz had been using the name Fabio Christian Hernandez. He had been arrested in Los Angeles County in February 2025 on charges of assaulting a firefighter or police officer with a deadly weapon. He posted a $75,000 surety bond. Then he disappeared. Law enforcement agencies across the West Coast began searching for Diaz. His photograph circulated among police departments. His aliases were flagged in computer systems. FBI agents monitored locations where he might surface. The hunt continued for months without success. Then came the target bombing in San Ramon. The explosion technique was different from previous crew methods. Instead of blowtorches and saws, someone had used an improvised explosive device. The blast pattern suggested knowledge of demolitions. Local police suspected they faced a dangerous escalation. Agent Chun reviewed security footage from the target store. The bomber's height and build matched Diaz's description. Motion patterns suggested the same person who had appeared in earlier surveillance videos. Chemical analysis of explosive residue pointed toward amateur bomb-making techniques. The FBI activated its Terrorist Explosive Device Analytical Center in Huntsville, Alabama. Forensic experts examined fragments from the scene. They identified components of a homemade device. The bomber had used commercially available materials. The construction showed basic knowledge but inexperienced execution. Witnesses near the target store reported seeing a man matching Diaz's description in the area during previous days. He had been observed walking through the shopping plaza at unusual hours. Store employees remembered someone asking questions about ATM cash delivery schedules. Phone records from cell towers near the target store showed suspicious activity on the night of the bombing. Multiple devices had been detected jamming signals in the area between 2 o'clock and 2:30 a.m. The pattern matched equipment signatures used in previous crew robberies. Federal authorities issued an updated arrest warrant for Diaz on July 25, 2025. The charges now included bank robbery, conspiracy to commit bank robbery, and use of explosive devices in the commission of a felony. The FBI offered a reward for information leading to his capture. local television news broadcasts carried his photograph. Spanish-language media outlets in Chilean communities published appeals for tips. Anonymous hotlines received dozens of calls. Most leads proved worthless. Diaz remained hidden. Then a witness came forward with critical information. A customer at a Newport Beach cafe had noticed a man matching Diaz's description on the morning of July 29, 2025. The person was carrying a duffel bag and appeared nervous. He paid cash for coffee and left quickly. Newport Beach police officers surrounded the cafe at dawn. They found Diaz sitting at a corner table. He made no attempt to resist arrest. Officers discovered forged identification papers in his possession. The duffel bag contained maps of bank branches throughout Orange County. Hidden compartments held components for improvised explosive devices. Diaz remained silent during questioning. He requested a lawyer immediately. He refused to provide information about remaining explosive materials or planned attacks. He showed no emotion when presented with evidence linking him to the target bombing. Federal prosecutors announced the arrest on July 31, 2025. Acting U.S. Attorney Kimberly Sanchez described Diaz as the final member of a sophisticated criminal organization. The crew had stolen more than $4 million during their 8-month robbery spree. Their capture had ended one of the most extensive ATM theft conspiracies in California history. The investigation revealed troubling patterns about modern bank security. Traditional alarm systems proved inadequate against professional thieves using electronic jamming equipment. Construction worker disguises allowed criminals to operate in public without suspicion. Vacation rental platforms provided untraceable safe houses for criminal operations. Security experts pointed to the crew's sophisticated methods as evidence of organized crime evolution. International criminal networks now shared techniques across borders. Social media and encrypted communications enabled coordination between distant locations. Legal immigration programs provided cover for illegal activities. The San Ramon bombing represented a dangerous escalation in ATM crime. Previous attacks had used mechanical tools to break into machines. The use of explosives threatened public safety on a new level. Chemical residue analysis showed amateur construction that easily could have caused deaths or widespread property damage. Community members in San Ramon expressed shock at the violence. Danville resident Gerald Son told reporters, "Something like this never happens in San Ramon. It kind of broke my heart to see something happen like this in our community." Local shopper Sheck Da compared the attack to video game violence. "That's like Grand Theft Auto. It's pretty scary, people walking around with explosives." The Target store reopened after repairs, but customer confidence remained shaken. Many residents avoided using ATMs during nighttime hours. Bank security companies reported increased demand for upgraded protective systems. Insurance companies began requiring additional safety measures for high-risk locations. Diaz's arrest closed a chapter of terror that had gripped bank customers throughout the western United States. His capture prevented additional bombings and potentially saved lives. The investigation demonstrated successful cooperation between local police, federal agents, and international law enforcement partners. But questions remained about other criminal networks using similar methods. The crew's techniques had been documented and shared online. Foreign nationals with temporary immigration status had proved capable of extensive criminal operations. Border security and visa screening procedures faced renewed scrutiny. The case also highlighted gaps in interagency communication. Local police departments often lacked resources to investigate complex financial crimes. Federal agencies sometimes failed to share intelligence with smaller jurisdictions. Coordination improvements became essential for preventing future attacks. As Diaz awaited trial in federal custody, the full scope of his crew's criminal network remained under investigation. Prosecutors prepared cases against the 10 other defendants already in custody. Asset forfeiture proceedings targeted millions in stolen cash and equipment. The legal process would continue for years. The families of the crew members faced different kinds of grief. Some had immigrated legally seeking better opportunities. They watched their relatives destroy their futures through criminal choices. Others had suspected illegal activities, but remained powerless to intervene. The American dream had become a nightmare of arrests and deportation. Chilean government officials expressed concern about their nationals' involvement in U.S. crimes. Diplomatic channels opened discussions about preventing future incidents. immigration screening procedures underwent review. Cultural factors that might contribute to criminal recruitment received examination. The target bombing in San Ramon would be remembered as a turning point in ATM security. The attack demonstrated that determined criminals would escalate their methods when traditional approaches failed. The use of explosives crossed a line that put innocent lives at risk. The community would never feel completely safe again. But the successful investigation also showed that law enforcement adaptation could match criminal innovation. International cooperation had tracked suspects across borders. Technology analysis had identified perpetrators from minimal evidence. Patient detective work had prevented additional attacks and brought justice to victims. The letter arrived at the Federal Public Defender's Office in Sacramento on May 14, 2025. It bore the seal of the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of California. Inside, prosecutors detailed charges against Diego Ananias Arellano Diaz, also known as Fabio Christian Hernandez. The criminal complaint stretched 86 pages. The affidavit painted a picture of organized crime that crossed international borders. Special Agent Nathan Blevins of the FBI had spent months assembling the case. His investigation revealed a network that exploited vulnerabilities in U.S. immigration systems. The crew members had entered legally through the visa waiver program. They used false identities and fake addresses. They rented vehicles under assumed names. They operated like soldiers in a foreign army. The visa waiver program allowed citizens from trusted countries to visit the United States for 90 days without traditional visas. Chile was the only Latin American nation approved for the program. The designation had been granted in March 2014. It required strict background checks and information sharing agreements. Criminal records were supposed to be flagged before travel authorization, but the system had cracks. Chilean nationals had been exploiting the program for years. They called it crime tourism. Professional thieves arrived as tourists and departed with millions in stolen goods. They targeted wealthy neighborhoods in California, Oregon, and Washington. They operated with military precision and vanished without trace. The origins of these criminal networks traced back to Chile's economic pressures. Despite being one of Latin America's wealthiest nations, many citizens faced limited opportunities. Criminal organizations recruited young men with promises of quick money in America. They provided training, equipment, and transportation. Members sent profits home to support extended families. Diego Arellano Diaz represented a typical recruit. Court documents revealed little about his background before criminal activities. He had used multiple aliases throughout his operations. His real age remained unknown. He had been arrested once before in Los Angeles County on charges of assaulting a firefighter or police officer with a deadly weapon. He posted a $75,000 bond and disappeared. The crew's leader was Alex Moyano Morales, a 24-year-old Chilean national known by the nickname Gordito. Confidential informants described him as the mastermind behind multiple robberies across several states. He coordinated team movements and distributed equipment. He selected targets and planned escape routes. He collected profits and arranged money transfers to Chile. Federal prosecutors had charged 10 other crew members by October 2024. Maite Silas Silva handled rental properties and logistics. Eric Osorio Olivares specialized in electronic surveillance countermeasures. Pablo Andres Valdez Rodriguez served as a driver and lookout. Rosa Francisca Bastiaz Serra provided support services and communications. The crew operated like a professional organization. They recruited specialists for specific roles. Camilo Andres Sepulveda Guzman operated power tools and cutting equipment. Basil Alejandro Cacosta Frias handled explosives and demolitions. Camilo Alarcón managed vehicle procurement and maintenance. Michelle Alondra Parada Munoz coordinated surveillance and reconnaissance. Their methods revealed sophisticated planning and execution. They used construction worker disguises to blend into business districts. They carried blowtorches and power saws concealed in legitimate toolboxes. They deployed cell phone jammers to disable alarm systems. They spray-painted security cameras black to avoid identification. The crew rented vacation properties through Airbnb and similar platforms. Maite Silas Silva booked accommodations in Bakersfield, Tulare, Turlock, and near the Oregon border. Security cameras at these rentals captured team members bringing in large containers and equipment bags. the gear matched items recovered at crime scenes. Vehicle procurement relied on underground networks in Los Angeles. A Hollywood club promoter provided stolen cars and false registration documents. One vehicle contained an Apple AirTag tracking device. FBI agents traced its location data to multiple bank robbery sites. Phone records connected the promoter to rental agreements and crew communications. The crew's criminal activities began in May 2024 with attempted ATM break-ins in Merced. Surveillance footage showed distinctive clothing and tools that matched patterns from subsequent crimes. Computer databases linked evidence to similar cases throughout California, Oregon, and Washington. The pattern suggested coordinated operations across multiple jurisdictions. In Fresno, they targeted a Wells Fargo branch using adjacent business access. Team members posed as construction workers to test wall thickness and security responses. After hours, they returned with power saws and cutting tools. They penetrated the vault through shared walls and used blowtorches to melt protective barriers. The Educational Employees Credit Union in Fresno fell victim to their electronic warfare capabilities. They deployed cell phone jammers to prevent alarm systems from contacting police. They used signal detection equipment to locate and disable backup communications. The attack netted more than $80,000 in cash from ATM reserves. Their most sophisticated operation occurred at a Golden One Credit Union in Auburn. They spent weeks scouting the location and testing security procedures. They triggered false alarms to time police response patterns. They identified the optimal window for attack when law enforcement presence was minimal. The crew's expansion into bomb-making represented a dangerous evolution in their methods. Previous attacks had relied on mechanical tools and electronic countermeasures. The San Ramon target bombing introduced improvised explosive devices to their arsenal. Chemical analysis of residue suggested amateur construction, but effective results. FBI forensic experts examined fragments from the target explosion. The bomber had used commercially available materials combined in an unstable mixture. The construction showed basic knowledge of explosives, but inexperienced execution. The blast pattern could have caused serious injuries or deaths if timing had been different. The Terrorist Explosive Device Analytical Center in Huntsville, Alabama, provided technical analysis of the bombing evidence. Agents identified components of a homemade device built from hardware store materials. The bomber had followed instructions likely found online or learned from criminal associates. The technique matched patterns used in other attacks. Phone records from cell towers near the target store revealed electronic jamming activity on the night of the bombing. Multiple devices had been used to block cellular signals between 2 o'clock and 2:30 a.m. The jamming pattern matched equipment signatures from previous crew robberies. The coordination suggested advanced planning and professional execution. Witnesses in the area reported seeing a man matching Diaz's description during the days before the attack. He had been observed walking through the shopping plaza at unusual hours. Store employees remembered someone asking questions about ATM cash delivery schedules. The reconnaissance pattern matched crew methods at other locations. The investigation revealed troubling gaps in information sharing between Chilean and American authorities. Despite formal agreements requiring criminal background disclosure, many crew members had entered the United States without proper screening. Their criminal histories in Chile had not been shared with U.S. immigration officials. Congressional representatives from affected districts began demanding action. Representative Young Kim of California led a bipartisan letter urging the Department of Homeland Security to suspend Chile's participation in the visa waiver program. The letter cited 59 residential burglaries in Orange County alone during 2024 that were suspected of being linked to South American theft groups. Orange County District Attorney Todd Spitzer became a vocal advocate for program reform. He had briefed FBI officials on the threat posed by Chilean criminal networks nearly 2 years before the target bombing. His warnings had been ignored until high-profile athletes became victims. The lack of federal response had allowed the problem to escalate. The FBI's delayed response reflected institutional challenges in combating international criminal networks. Local police departments lacked resources to investigate complex financial crimes. Federal agencies struggled to coordinate investigations across multiple jurisdictions. Information sharing between countries remained slow and unreliable. DHS Secretary Kristi Noem visited Chile in July 2025 to address these concerns. she met with Chilean officials to discuss improved cooperation and information-sharing protocols. Chile committed to accepting ICE charter flights and enrolling in enhanced verification programs. The meetings resulted in a letter of intent for continued partnership. But the diplomatic efforts came too late to prevent growing calls for Chile's removal from the visa waiver program. Senator Young Kim and other legislators pointed to increasing crime rates as evidence that the program was being exploited. They demanded immediate suspension until security protocols could be strengthened. Chilean government officials expressed concern about their nationals' criminal activities in the United States. They implemented awareness campaigns about compliance requirements and penalties under the ESTA program. They increased cooperation with U.S. law enforcement agencies. They began reviewing visa waiver eligibility procedures. The problem extended beyond individual criminals to organized recruitment networks. Crime groups in Chile actively recruited young men for American operations. They provided training in construction trades to create legitimate cover stories. They taught surveillance techniques and equipment operation. They arranged transportation and housing. Poverty and limited opportunities in Chile made recruitment easier. Many young men faced unemployment or low-wage jobs with little hope for advancement. Criminal organizations offered immediate cash payments and promises of continuing income. The risks seemed acceptable compared to economic desperation. The recruitment process typically began in working-class neighborhoods of Santiago and other Chilean cities. Criminal contacts identified potential candidates through family and social connections. They approached men with construction experience or mechanical skills. They promised easy money for temporary work in America. Training occurred in safe houses and remote locations throughout Chile. Recruits learned to use power tools and cutting equipment. They practiced surveillance techniques and escape procedures. They memorized American business practices and cultural norms. They received forged documents and travel instructions. Transportation to the United States relied on legitimate commercial flights. Recruits traveled individually or in small groups to avoid suspicion. They carried tourist documentation and fake business cards. They memorized cover stories about vacation plans or family visits. They entered through major airports in Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Seattle. Once in America, crew members gathered at predetermined locations. Safe house operators provided vehicles, equipment, and target information. Team leaders assigned roles based on individual skills and experience. Operations began immediately to maximize profit during the limited visa period. The crew's success depended on rapid execution and immediate departure. They typically completed multiple robberies within weeks or months. They sent stolen goods to fencing operations on the East and West coasts. They wired profits to Chile through underground banking networks. Then they returned home before visa expiration. The fencing operations represented a crucial component of the criminal network. Stolen jewelry and luxury goods required expert appraisal and international sales channels. Fence operators maintained connections with buyers in Chile, Colombia, and other South American countries. They provided essential services that made the robberies profitable. Federal prosecutors in New York had charged two men with operating a large jewelry fencing operation between 2020 and 2025. Dmitry Nizinsky and Juan Villar allegedly laundered millions in stolen goods through their pawn shop operations. They had direct connections to Chilean burglary crews operating nationwide. The fencing network's sophistication matched that of the burglary crews. They used encrypted communications and coded language to avoid detection. They maintained multiple business locations and storage facilities. They employed jewelry experts and precious metals dealers. They coordinated with international shipping companies. The profits from these operations were staggering. Individual robberies netted hundreds of thousands of dollars in cash and merchandise. The Simi Valley Jewelry Store heist alone generated more than $3 million in stolen goods. Multiply such operations across dozens of locations, and the total reached tens of millions annually. Chilean government statistics revealed the impact of these criminal exports on domestic economics. Money transfers from the United States to Chile had increased significantly during the peak years of theft group operations. Bank records showed suspicious patterns of cash deposits in accounts linked to crew members' families. The social consequences in Chilean communities were complex. Families of crew members enjoyed sudden wealth from American operations. young men returned home with expensive cars and luxury goods. Their success inspired others to join criminal networks. The cycle of recruitment and operation continued to expand. But the arrests and prosecutions in America created different problems. Families faced deportation proceedings and criminal penalties. Children lost fathers to U.S. prison systems. Communities dealt with the stigma of association with international crime. The American dream became a nightmare of broken families. Chilean law enforcement agencies struggled to combat domestic recruitment networks. Criminal organizations operated in poor neighborhoods where police presence was limited. They used intimidation and violence to maintain control. They corrupted local officials and business operators. Traditional law enforcement approaches proved inadequate. The international scope of these criminal networks challenged conventional prosecution strategies. Evidence had to be gathered across multiple countries and jurisdictions. Witness cooperation required complex legal agreements and protection programs. Asset forfeiture faced obstacles from foreign banking regulations. Diego Arellano Diaz represented the human cost of these systemic failures. His criminal career had escalated from simple theft to bombing attacks that threatened public safety. His case demonstrated how individual choices combined with institutional weaknesses to create dangerous outcomes. His arrest in Newport Beach ended months of federal manhunts and public fear. But it also raised questions about how many other crew members remained at large. FBI investigations continued across multiple states. Grand juries issued additional indictments. The scope of South American criminal networks was still being uncovered. The Target bombing had served as a wake-up call for law enforcement and policymakers. The use of explosives crossed a line that put innocent lives at risk. Traditional approaches to property crime were insufficient for dealing with organized international networks. New strategies and resources were needed. The case also highlighted the human toll of grief that ran through all aspects of the story. Victims of robberies lost irreplaceable family heirlooms and felt violated in their own homes. Law enforcement officers worked exhausting hours tracking dangerous criminals. Families of crew members faced deportation and imprisonment. Communities struggled with fear and mistrust. As Diego Arellano Diaz sat in federal custody awaiting trial, the larger questions about immigration policy and international crime remained unresolved. His case would serve as a test of federal prosecutors' ability to combat sophisticated criminal networks. The outcome would influence future policy decisions about visa waiver programs and international cooperation. The investigation continued to expand as new evidence emerged. Phone records revealed additional connections to criminal networks in other states. Financial analysis uncovered money laundering operations spanning multiple countries. Forensic examination of seized equipment provided links to unsolved crimes. But beneath all the legal proceedings and policy debates, the human cost of Diego Arellano Diaz's choices continued to resonate. His bombs had shattered more than ATM machines. They had destroyed trust in community safety and international cooperation. The grief would linger long after the last court proceedings ended. Special Agent Jennifer Chun stood in the Target parking lot at dawn on July 20, 2025, watching evidence technicians process the crime scene. Glass fragments caught morning light like scattered diamonds. Yellow police tape fluttered in the breeze. The smell of chemical residue hung in the air 3 hours after the explosion. The FBI evidence response team had arrived from Sacramento within 2 hours of the initial police call. Agent Chin supervised their methodical examination of the blast site. Every piece of debris would be cataloged and analyzed. Every surface would be tested for fingerprints and DNA. The investigation followed protocols developed over decades of bombing cases. San Ramon Police Detective Lisa Martinez showed Chun through the damaged store. The explosion had occurred near the eastern entrance where the ATM machine once stood intact. The blast had blown the machine's cash compartments open like flower petals. Metal fragments lay scattered across polished concrete floors. Store merchandise displayed strange blast patterns where shock waves had passed. The improvised explosive device had been placed at the base of the ATM machine. Chemical analysis would later reveal a mixture of commercially available materials assembled by an amateur bomb maker. The blast pattern suggested someone with basic knowledge of explosives, but limited experience in precise placement. FBI bomb technician Ryan Kowalski examined the blast crater. The explosion had torn through reinforced concrete and damaged structural supports. The bomber had used more explosive material than necessary for the task. A professional would have achieved the same result with half the quantity and better placement. Evidence technicians photographed the scene from multiple angles. They used laser measuring devices to create precise three-dimensional maps of debris patterns. Computer software would later recreate the explosion in virtual reality. Investigators could replay the event and test different theories about bomber location and device construction. The Terrorist Explosive Device Analytical Center in Huntsville, Alabama, would receive fragments within 48 hours. TEDAC maintained the government's single repository for improvised explosive devices collected throughout the United States. Their forensic laboratory could identify bomb makers by examining construction techniques and material choices. Dr. Sarah Williams, TEDAC's lead chemist, had analyzed thousands of bombing cases during her 15-year career. She would examine explosive residue under electron microscopes and compare chemical signatures to known terrorist methods. The San Ramon bombing showed characteristics of homemade construction using internet instructions. The bomber had purchased materials from multiple hardware stores to avoid suspicion. Receipt analysis would reveal visits to Home Depot, Lowe's, and local shops throughout Northern California. Security cameras had captured images of a man matching Diego Arellano Diaz's description buying pipes, wires, and chemical components. Agent Chun reviewed surveillance footage from the target store's security system. The bomber had approached the ATM at 2:15 a.m. wearing dark clothing and a hooded jacket. He had moved efficiently, suggesting advanced reconnaissance and planning. The device placement took less than 4 minutes before he departed the scene. The explosion occurred at 2:19 a.m., 4 minutes after the bomber left the store. The timing suggested a simple delay mechanism rather than remote detonation. Chemical analysis would confirm the use of a basic timing device constructed from household components. The bomber had learned techniques from online sources. Store manager Rebecca Santos arrived at 6 a.m. to find her workplace transformed into a federal crime scene. The eastern entrance remained blocked with wooden panels. FBI agents questioned employees about recent suspicious activity. Several workers remembered someone asking about ATM cash delivery schedules. Target Corporation released a statement expressing gratitude that no one had been injured in the explosion. The company pledged full cooperation with law enforcement investigations. Corporate security analysts reviewed footage from all Northern California locations for similar reconnaissance activity. Community members gathered in the parking lot throughout the day, drawn by police activity and media reports. Many residents had heard the explosion from their homes, but assumed it was construction work or a traffic accident. The reality of terrorism in their quiet suburb proved difficult to accept. "Something like this never happens in San Ramon," Danville resident Gerald Son told reporters. "It kind of broke my heart to see something happen like this in our community." His sentiment reflected widespread shock among neighbors who considered their area immune from violent crime. San Ramon consistently ranked among California's safest cities. The community boasted low crime rates and strong police-community relationships. Children played in parks without supervision. Residents left car doors unlocked. The bombing shattered assumptions about suburban security. Local resident Sheikh Da compared the attack to video game violence. "That's like Grand Theft Auto," he said. "It's pretty scary, people walking around with explosives." His comment captured growing fears about criminal escalation and public safety threats. The FBI's evidence response team worked methodically through the crime scene. Technicians collected blast residue samples for chemical analysis. They recovered metal fragments that would be examined for tool marks and manufacturing signatures. Every piece of evidence would be processed at the FBI laboratory in Quantico. Forensic technician Maria Rodriguez specialized in explosive residue analysis. She used sophisticated equipment to identify trace chemicals left by the bombing. The target explosion showed signatures of ammonium nitrate mixed with fuel oil, a combination known as ANFO. This explosive mixture was popular among amateur bomb makers because of its availability and effectiveness. ANFO had been used in numerous terrorist attacks throughout American history. The 1995 Oklahoma City bombing employed a similar mixture. Timothy McVeigh had purchased materials from farm supply stores without arousing suspicion. The San Ramon bomber had followed similar procurement patterns. The blast damage extended beyond the ATM machine itself. Shock waves had cracked windows throughout the store entrance area. Display cases showed characteristic stress patterns from explosive pressure. Forensic engineers would analyze structural damage to determine the bomb's explosive yield. European ATM bombings had increased significantly in recent years, particularly in Germany and the Netherlands. Criminal organizations used gas explosions and solid explosives to breach cash machines. The Dutch government had developed risk assessment tools to protect residents living near targeted ATMs. TNO, a Dutch research organization, had studied the risks of ATM bombings in residential buildings. Their analysis showed that explosions could cause flying debris, glass shards, and severe structural damage. Residents faced serious injury risks from criminal activity near their homes. The San Ramon bombing occurred in a commercial area rather than residential neighborhood, reducing civilian casualty risks. However, the use of explosives in a public space represented a dangerous escalation from traditional property crimes. Law enforcement agencies warned of copycat attacks using similar methods. FBI analysts compared the San Ramon bombing to attacks throughout Europe and South America. Chilean criminal networks had used explosives in bank robberies across multiple countries. The techniques appeared to be spreading through criminal organizations as traditional security measures improved. Agent Chin coordinated with international law enforcement agencies through FBI legal attaché offices. Chilean police provided information about explosive techniques used by criminal organizations in their country. The cooperation helped identify patterns and predict future attacks. The investigation revealed sophisticated counter-surveillance methods used by the bomber. Cell phone records showed jamming activity in the area during the explosion. Multiple devices had been used to block signals and prevent alarm systems from contacting police. The coordination suggested advanced planning and technical expertise. Store employees reported that alarm systems had activated briefly before falling silent during the bombing. The sequence matched patterns from other South American theft group attacks throughout California. Electronic warfare capabilities had become standard equipment for professional criminal organizations. The bomber had disabled security cameras with spray paint before placing the explosive device. This technique had been used in multiple ATM robberies throughout the Western United States. Law enforcement agencies recognized the signature methods of organized crime groups. Chemical analysis of the explosive residue took several days to complete. TEDAC scientists used mass spectrometry and chromatography to identify specific compounds. The results confirmed the use of commercially available materials assembled according to instructions found on criminal websites. The timing device showed amateur construction but functional design. The bomber had used a simple mechanical timer connected to an electrical circuit. The components were readily available from electronics stores and hobby shops. No specialized knowledge was required for assembly. FBI forensic accountants traced purchases of explosive materials to credit cards and bank accounts linked to Diego Arellano Diaz. The investigation revealed a pattern of small purchases spread across multiple locations and time periods. The bomber had attempted to avoid detection through careful planning. Store security footage from various locations captured Diaz purchasing components over several weeks. He had visited hardware stores throughout Northern California, buying small quantities of materials to avoid suspicion. The systematic procurement suggested detailed advance planning. The investigation expanded to include analysis of internet search history and communications records. FBI cyber specialists recovered evidence of online research into bomb-making techniques and ATM security systems. The digital trail provided crucial links between Diaz and the attack. Social media monitoring revealed discussions of ATM bombing techniques in closed criminal forums. Chilean nationals had shared information about successful attacks throughout Europe and South America. The knowledge transfer enabled criminals to adapt techniques to American conditions. The Target store remained closed for 3 days while investigators processed the crime scene. Corporate loss prevention specialists worked with FBI agents to assess security vulnerabilities at other locations. The company implemented enhanced protection measures at high-risk sites. Insurance adjusters estimated damage costs at more than $2 million, including structural repairs, lost merchandise, and business interruption. The explosion had caused extensive damage beyond the immediate blast area. Store renovation required specialized contractors familiar with explosive damage restoration. community leaders organized public meetings to address security concerns raised by the bombing. Police Chief Andrew Hall briefed residents on investigative progress and safety measures. The department increased patrols around commercial areas and financial institutions. Local banks reviewed ATM security protocols in response to the target bombing. Many institutions relocated machines away from building facades and installed enhanced protective barriers. The crime had forced widespread reassessment of automated banking security. The investigation revealed gaps in information sharing between federal and local law enforcement agencies. San Ramon police had not been briefed about South American theft group activities in their jurisdiction. The lack of intelligence had prevented proactive security measures. FBI headquarters issued bulletins warning about explosive techniques used by international criminal organizations. The alerts provided local police with information about reconnaissance patterns and target selection methods. The goal was preventing future attacks through improved awareness. The San Ramon bombing represented a significant escalation in ATM crime throughout the United States. Previous attacks had used mechanical tools and electronic countermeasures. The introduction of explosives posed greater risks to public safety and property damage. Crime analysts noted similarities between the San Ramon attack and bombings in Chile and other South American countries. The techniques appeared to have been transferred through criminal networks operating across international borders. Law enforcement cooperation became essential for prevention. The arrest of Diego Arellano Diaz 9 days after the bombing provided crucial evidence about bomb construction and procurement methods. His capture prevented additional attacks and potentially saved lives. The investigation demonstrated the importance of rapid response and international cooperation. The evidence collected at the target store would support federal prosecution under terrorism statutes. The use of explosives in commission of a federal crime carried severe penalties. Prosecutors would seek maximum sentences to deter future attacks. The forensic analysis conducted by TEDAC and FBI laboratories provided definitive proof linking Diaz to the bombing. Chemical signatures, tool marks, and construction techniques matched evidence found in his possession at the time of arrest. The scientific evidence would prove crucial in court. The investigation also revealed the broader network of South American criminal organizations operating throughout the United States. The target bombing had been committed by the last free member of a crew that had stolen more than $4 million in previous attacks. Federal prosecutors announced additional charges against Diaz following the bombing investigation. The charges included use of explosive devices in commission of a felony, a crime carrying up to life imprisonment. The severity of penalties reflected the dangerous escalation in criminal methods. The San Ramon community began the slow process of recovery from the terrorist attack. Residents installed additional security systems and changed daily routines. The sense of safety that had defined the suburb was permanently altered by the explosion. Target Corporation reopened the store on July 23, 2025, after completing security improvements and repairs. The company installed enhanced ATM protection and upgraded surveillance systems. The bombing had forced retailers throughout California to reassess security vulnerabilities. The investigation continued even after Diaz's arrest as FBI agents pursued leads about remaining criminal network members. Phone records and financial analysis revealed connections to crimes throughout the western United States. The scope of South American criminal operations remained under investigation. The target bombing served as a wake-up call for law enforcement agencies and policymakers about the evolving threat from international criminal organizations. The use of explosives crossed a line that threatened public safety on a new level. The community's grief would drive policy changes for years to come. The forensic evidence collected at the scene would support not only criminal prosecution, but also civil litigation against various parties. Insurance companies would use the investigation results to assess liability and determine coverage obligations. The economic impact extended far beyond the immediate damage. The psychological impact on community members proved more difficult to measure, but equally significant. Children asked parents why someone would bomb their neighborhood Target store. Adults questioned assumptions about suburban safety and security. The grief would heal slowly. The investigation established new protocols for responding to explosive attacks on commercial targets. Law enforcement agencies throughout California adopted enhanced procedures for crime scene processing and evidence collection. the lessons learned would improve responses to future incidents. The San Ramon bombing marked a turning point in the evolution of organized crime in America. International criminal networks had demonstrated their willingness to use terrorist tactics in pursuit of financial gain. The escalation demanded new approaches to prevention and prosecution. As federal agents continued their investigation into the broader criminal network, the Target store stood as a symbol of community resilience and law enforcement determination. The bombed entrance had been repaired, but the memory of violence would remain forever embedded in the community's consciousness. The grief felt by San Ramon residents reflected a broader American experience with terrorism and violent crime. The bombing had brought war zone tactics to a peaceful suburb. The community would never feel completely safe again, but they would also never forget the courage of those who investigated the attack and brought the bomber to justice. The phone call came at 6:47 a.m. on Tuesday, July 29, 2025. Newport Beach Police Sergeant Michael Harrison was drinking coffee at the beachfront station when his radio crackled to life. Anonymous tip reported a suspicious man matching an FBI wanted poster at the Balboa Cafe on Balboa Island. The caller had seen the photograph on local news broadasts. The man was carrying a duffel bag and paying cash for everything. Sergeant Harrison pulled the FBI bulletin from his desk drawer. Diego Ananias Arellano Diaz, also known as Fabio Christian Hernandez, wanted for bank robbery and conspiracy. The photograph showed a thin man with dark hair and distinctive facial features. The reward offered $50,000 for information leading to his capture. FBI Special Agent Jennifer Chun received the call at 7:15 a.m. She was reviewing case files at the Sacramento field office when the Newport Beach Police Department contacted the Bureau's tip line. Chun had been coordinating the manhunt for Diaz since the Target bombing 9 days earlier. This was their first solid lead since the explosion. Agent Chun dispatched a tactical team from the FBI's Los Angeles field office to Newport Beach. The agents included explosive specialists and members of the Joint Terrorism Task Force. They established surveillance positions around the Balboa Cafe within 30 minutes of the initial call. The operation required careful coordination to avoid spooking the suspect. At 8:22 a.m., FBI agents confirmed visual contact with Diego Arellano Diaz inside the cafe. He was sitting at a corner table drinking coffee and reading a Spanish-language newspaper. A dark green duffel bag sat on the floor beside his chair. He appeared calm but alert, frequently glancing toward the entrance and exit doors. Special Agent Thomas Rivera led the arrest team. He had 15 years of experience with high-risk fugitive apprehensions and specialized in bombing cases. Rivera studied the cafe layout through binoculars from across the street. The suspect had chosen a position with clear sight lines to all entrances. He would be difficult to surprise. At 8:35 a.m., agents surrounded the cafe. Rivera entered through the front door, while two agents covered the rear exit. Diaz showed no resistance when confronted. He raised his hands slowly and allowed officers to handcuff him without protest. His only words were, "I want a lawyer," spoken in accented English. The duffel bag contained materials that sent shockwaves through the law enforcement team. Federal agents found detailed maps of bank branches throughout Orange County. The locations were marked with handwritten notes about security procedures and cash delivery schedules. Some maps showed ATM locations circled in red ink. Hidden compartments in the bag revealed bomb-making components. Agents discovered electronic timers, copper wire, and chemical compounds. The materials matched components used in the San Ramon Target bombing. FBI explosives experts would later confirm the substances could produce improvised explosive devices similar to the one that had destroyed the ATM. Forged identification documents filled another section of the bag. Diaz carried fake driver's licenses and social security cards under multiple aliases. The quality of forgery suggested professional counterfeiting operations. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents would trace the documents to criminal networks operating throughout California. Phone records found in Diaz's possession revealed communications with other crew members already in federal custody. Text messages discussed bomb construction techniques and target reconnaissance. The digital evidence would strengthen prosecution cases against the entire South American theft group. Agent Chin arrived in Newport Beach at 11:30 a.m. to oversee the interrogation process. Diaz had invoked his right to legal counsel and refused to answer questions about bombing activities or crew operations. He sat silently in the interview room, occasionally asking for water or bathroom breaks. The arrest location provided additional clues about Diaz's activities during the manhunt. The Balboa Cafe sat near expensive waterfront properties and luxury marinas. Security cameras throughout the area captured him conducting surveillance of potential targets during the previous week. He had been planning additional attacks. Local hotel records showed Diaz had been staying at a budget motel in nearby Huntington Beach. FBI agents searched his room and discovered additional maps and surveillance photographs of banks throughout Southern California. The evidence suggested he was planning a new series of robberies using explosive devices. Federal prosecutors moved quickly to file additional charges against Diaz following his arrest. The charges included use of explosive devices in commission of a federal crime, possession of unregistered destructive devices, and use of fraudulent identification documents. The terrorism-related charges carried potential life sentences. The arrest made headlines throughout California as news media reported the capture of the last fugitive from the South American theft group. Local television stations aired footage of Diaz being led away in handcuffs. Spanish-language media outlets in Chilean communities provided extensive coverage of the case. Acting U.S. Attorney Kimberly Sanchez held a press conference at 3 p.m. to announce the arrest. She described Diaz as an extremely dangerous individual who had escalated from property crime to terrorism. The use of explosives had crossed a line that threatened public safety throughout the region. "This arrest represents the culmination of an intensive federal investigation," Sanchez told reporters. Diego Arellano Diaz and his co-conspirators stole more than $4 million from banks and credit unions throughout the western United States. His decision to use explosives put innocent lives at risk and will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of federal law. The investigation revealed how Diaz had remained hidden during the 9-day manhunt following the target bombing. He had used cash-only transactions and avoided electronic communications that could be traced by law enforcement. His capture resulted from old-fashioned police work and community vigilance. Newport Beach Police Chief John Lewis praised the cooperation between federal and local law enforcement agencies. "The arrest demonstrated the effectiveness of information sharing and coordinated response protocols." Similar cooperation had been essential throughout the investigation of the South American theft group. The cafe where Diaz was arrested became a local landmark as news crews and curious residents gathered throughout the day. Many customers expressed shock that a wanted terrorist had been sitting among them drinking coffee. The incident highlighted how dangerous fugitives could hide in plain sight. FBI forensic accountants began tracing Diaz's financial activities during his time as a fugitive. Bank records and business surveillance footage revealed a pattern of cash transactions throughout Orange County. He had been living frugally while planning additional attacks. The explosive materials found in Diaz's possession were transported to the FBI laboratory in Quantico, Virginia, for detailed analysis. Forensic chemists would compare the substances to residue collected from the San Ramon bombing. The analysis would provide definitive proof of his involvement in the target attack. Chemical analysis of the bomb-making materials revealed sophisticated knowledge of explosives construction. The components included ammonium nitrate, aluminum powder, and electronic detonators. The combination matched techniques used in terrorist attacks throughout Europe and South America. The timing devices found in Diaz's bag showed professional construction methods. FBI explosives experts recognized the design from other international bombing cases. The devices could be set for delayed detonation, allowing bombers to escape before explosions occurred. Federal investigators expanded their analysis of Diaz's activities to include possible connections to other unsolved bombing cases. Similar explosive techniques had been used in attacks throughout California during the previous year. The investigation would determine if Diaz was responsible for additional crimes. The arrest provided closure for victims of the South American theft group's criminal activities. Business owners who had been robbed expressed relief that the final crew member was in custody. Many had lived in fear of additional attacks since the target bombing. San Ramon community leaders organized a press conference to thank law enforcement agencies for capturing Diaz. Target store employees who had worked during the bombing's aftermath expressed gratitude for the successful investigation. The arrest allowed the community to begin healing. the investigation revealed troubling patterns about modern terrorist recruitment and training. Diaz had learned bomb-making techniques from online sources and criminal associates. The democratization of explosives knowledge posed growing challenges for counterterrorism efforts. Federal authorities issued warnings to businesses that sold bomb-making components. Hardware stores, agricultural suppliers, and electronics retailers received bulletins about suspicious purchasing patterns. The FBI's bomb-making materials awareness program provided training on recognizing dangerous activities. The case highlighted the importance of public vigilance in preventing terrorist attacks. The anonymous tip that led to Diaz's arrest demonstrated how ordinary citizens could contribute to public safety. Law enforcement agencies encouraged continued reporting of suspicious activities. Immigration officials began deportation proceedings against Diaz, even as criminal prosecutions moved forward. His status as a Chilean national using fraudulent documents complicated legal procedures. The case would test coordination between criminal and immigration courts. The arrest also raised questions about gaps in the visa waiver program that had allowed South American criminals to enter the United States legally. Congressional representatives demanded stricter screening procedures and enhanced information sharing with foreign governments. Chilean government officials expressed cooperation with U.S. law enforcement agencies investigating the criminal network. They provided additional intelligence about recruitment methods and training activities in Chile. The international cooperation would help prevent future criminal operations. The evidence collected from Diaz's arrest would support prosecution cases against other crew members already in custody. Phone records and surveillance photographs linked him to specific robberies throughout California. The additional evidence would strengthen federal convictions. Defense attorneys began preparing arguments about Diaz's mental state and background. They would argue that poverty and limited opportunities in Chile had made him vulnerable to criminal recruitment. The defense strategy would emphasize rehabilitation over punishment. Federal prosecutors countered that Diaz's decision to use explosives demonstrated clear intent to commit terrorism. The escalation from property crime to bombing attacks showed increasing dangerousness. They would seek maximum sentences to prevent future violence. The investigation continued even after Diaz's arrest as FBI agents pursued leads about remaining criminal network members. Financial analysis revealed money transfers to South America that suggested ongoing operations. The scope of international criminal networks remained under examination. The target bombing had served as a wake-up call about the evolving threat from organized crime groups. The use of explosives by profit-motivated criminals represented a dangerous trend in American law enforcement. The case would influence training and resource allocation for years. Community members in Newport Beach expressed mixed feelings about the arrest in their city. Some residents felt proud that local vigilance had helped capture a dangerous fugitive. Others worried about the implications of terrorists operating in their affluent community. The arrest demonstrated the effectiveness of multi-agency task forces in complex federal investigations. FBI agents, local police, immigration officials, and international partners had worked together to solve the case. The cooperation would serve as a model for future operations. As Diaz sat in federal detention awaiting trial, investigators continued analyzing evidence from his capture. The materials found in his possession would provide insights into terrorist recruitment, training, and operational methods. The intelligence would help prevent future attacks. The case also highlighted the human cost of international crime on families and communities. Diaz's relatives in Chile face stigma and questioning about their knowledge of his activities. The ripple effects of criminal choices extended far beyond the perpetrators themselves. The Newport Beach arrest marked the end of one of the most intensive manhunts in FBI history. The 9-day search had involved hundreds of agents and cost millions in federal resources. The successful conclusion justified the massive investment in public safety. The investigation revealed how modern criminals adapted traditional methods to contemporary conditions. The use of encrypted communications, cryptocurrency transactions, and international travel networks complicated law enforcement responses. New strategies would be needed for future cases. The evidence collected during the manhunt and arrest would support academic research into terrorist psychology and criminal network operations. Universities and think tanks would study the case to understand recruitment patterns and prevention strategies. federal judges began preparing for what would become one of the most significant terrorism prosecutions in California history. The case would test legal procedures for trying international criminals who used explosive devices in commission of federal crimes. The arrest also provided vindication for law enforcement agencies that had faced criticism about intelligence sharing and resource allocation. The successful investigation demonstrated the value of persistent detective work and interagency cooperation. As Diego Arellano Diaz awaited trial in federal custody, the full scope of his criminal network's activities continued to emerge. The investigation would eventually reveal connections to dozens of unsolved crimes throughout the western United States and provide crucial intelligence about international criminal operations. The Newport Beach arrest represented both an ending and a beginning. It closed the chapter on a dangerous fugitive's freedom while opening new investigations into the broader networks that had made his crimes possible. The grief of victims would slowly give way to justice, but the scars would remain forever. The case demonstrated that terrorism could emerge from unexpected sources and strike in seemingly safe communities. The transformation of a profit-motivated criminal into a bomber willing to risk innocent lives showed how quickly threats could escalate. The lesson would influence counterterrorism strategies for generations to come. The Robert T. Matsui U.S. Courthouse in Sacramento stood gray and imposing on a cold morning in December 2025. Federal marshals led Diego Ananias Arellano Diaz through security checkpoints and metal detectors. His shackles clinked against polished marble floors. He wore an orange jumpsuit marked Federal Detention Center. His face showed no emotion as he entered courtroom 1 of the Eastern District of California. Judge Troy L. Nunley had presided over hundreds of federal criminal cases during his 12 years on the bench. The chief judge of the Eastern District studied the file spread across his desk. United States versus Diego Ananias Arellano Diaz included charges of bank robbery, conspiracy to commit bank robbery, and use of explosive devices in commission of a federal crime. The maximum sentence totaled 45 years in federal prison. Acting U.S. Attorney Kimberly A. Sanchez sat at the prosecution table with 2 assistant prosecutors. They had prepared for months to present the government's case against the last member of the South American theft group. Federal agents filled the courtroom's front rows. FBI Special Agent Jennifer Chun, who had led the investigation, reviewed evidence folders 1 final time. Public Defender Maria Rodriguez represented Diaz under the Criminal Justice Act. She had been assigned to the case after Diaz's arrest in Newport Beach. Her strategy focused on mitigation rather than challenging evidence. The forensic proof linking her client to the target bombing was overwhelming. She would argue for leniency based on his background and circumstances. The courtroom gallery held fewer than 20 people. Target store employees sat in the second row. Rebecca Santos, the store manager who had discovered the bombing's aftermath, clutched tissues in her lap. Other victims of the theft crew's crimes throughout California had traveled to Sacramento for the hearing. Their faces showed a mixture of anger and relief. Judge Nunley called the case to order at 9 a.m. sharp. United States versus Diego Ananias Arellano Diaz, criminal case number 25, CR 345. Counsel, please state your appearances for the record. The formal proceedings began with procedural matters that would determine a man's fate for decades to come. Acting U.S. Attorney Sanchez rose first. Your Honor, Kimberly A. Sanchez for the United States, joined by Assistant U.S. Attorneys David Chun and Sarah Martinez. The prosecution team had compiled evidence from multiple states and federal agencies. Their case would demonstrate the escalating violence of international criminal networks. Defense counsel introduced herself next. Maria Rodriguez from the Federal Public Defender's Office, representing Mr. Arellano Diaz. She faced an uphill battle defending a client who had bombed a public building. Her arguments would focus on his difficult circumstances and potential for rehabilitation. The defendant stood when Judge Nunley addressed him directly. Mr. Arellano Diaz, you are charged with bank robbery in violation of 18 U.S.C. Section 2113, conspiracy to commit bank robbery in violation of 18 U.S.C. Section 371, and use of destructive devices in commission of a federal crime in violation of 18 U.S.C. Section 844. Do you understand these charges? Diaz answered quietly in accented English. Yes, Your Honor. The plea colloquy revealed details about Diaz's background that had remained hidden during the investigation. He was 28 years old, born in Santiago, Chile. He had completed 8th grade before leaving school to work construction. His family lived in poverty in a working-class neighborhood. He had 2 younger sisters who depended on money he sent from America. Prosecutor Sanchez outlined the government's evidence against Diaz. Your Honor, the defendant was a member of an organized criminal enterprise that stole more than $4 million from financial institutions across 3 states. He personally participated in the bombing of an ATM machine at a Target store in San Ramon using an improvised explosive device. His actions endangered innocent lives and terrorized a peaceful community. The factual basis for the plea agreement detailed the progression from property crime to terrorism. Diaz had entered the United States legally through the visa waiver program in April 2024. He joined the South American theft group and participated in multiple ATM robberies throughout California, Oregon, and Washington. After his crew members were arrested in October 2024, he escalated to bombing attacks. Chemical analysis of explosive residue from the San Ramon bombing matched materials found in Diaz's possession at his arrest. FBI forensic experts testified about the construction and placement of the improvised explosive device. Surveillance footage showed him conducting reconnaissance at the Target store before the attack. Cell phone records revealed his location during the bombing. Defense counsel Rodriguez presented mitigation evidence about her client's circumstances. Your Honor, Mr. Arellano Diaz grew up in extreme poverty in Chile. He was recruited by criminal organizations that exploited his desperation and lack of opportunities. He sent money home to support his family, including his disabled mother and younger sisters. While this does not excuse his actions, it provides context for his choices. The sentencing hearing included victim impact statements from people affected by the South American theft group's crimes. Target store manager Rebecca Santos described the psychological trauma of discovering the bombing's aftermath. I still have nightmares about that morning. The smell of explosives and the sight of destroyed property will never leave my memory. Our employees were terrified to return to work. The community lost its sense of safety. Bank customers whose ATMs had been targeted by the crew also addressed the court. Susan Martinez from Fresno explained how the robbery at her credit union affected her daily life. I'm afraid to use ATM machines after business hours. I change my banking routines and avoid certain locations. These criminals stole more than money. They stole my peace of mind and sense of security. San Ramon resident Gerald Stson represented community members impacted by the Target bombing. Something like this never happens in San Ramon. We moved to this area because it was safe for our families. The explosion shattered that sense of security. Children ask why someone bombed their neighborhood Target. We shouldn't have to explain terrorism to elementary school students. The prosecution requested the maximum sentence allowed under federal guidelines. Assistant U.S. Attorney Chin argued that Diaz's escalation to bombing represented a clear danger to public safety. The defendant progressed from property crime to terrorism in a matter of months. His willingness to use explosives in a public space demonstrates complete disregard for human life. Only the maximum sentence will protect communities from future attacks. Defense counsel Rodriguez pleaded for leniency based on her client's background and circumstances. Your Honor, Mr. Arellano Diaz was a victim before he became a perpetrator. Criminal organizations in Chile recruited vulnerable young men with promises of easy money. His desperation made him susceptible to manipulation. He deserves punishment, but he also deserves a chance at rehabilitation and redemption. The courtroom remained silent as Judge Nunley considered the evidence and arguments. Federal sentencing guidelines recommended 37 years in prison for Diaz's crimes. The terrorism enhancement added additional years to the calculation. The judge had discretion to impose sentences within the guideline range or depart based on exceptional circumstances. Federal probation officer Michael Thompson presented a pre-sentence investigation report about Diaz's criminal history and personal background. The defendant had no prior convictions in the United States, but had been arrested twice in Chile for theft-related offenses. Psychological evaluation suggested he suffered from depression and anxiety related to poverty and family responsibilities. Immigration officials testified about deportation proceedings that would begin after Diaz completed his prison sentence. Immigration and Customs Enforcement had filed removal charges based on his criminal convictions and immigration violations. He would be banned from returning to the United States for life after deportation to Chile. The proceeding revealed systemic problems with the visa waiver program that had allowed South American criminal networks to operate freely. Congressional testimony would later cite the Diaz case as evidence for stricter screening procedures. Chilean citizens would face additional scrutiny and potential program suspension based on criminal activities. Target Corporation submitted a victim impact statement detailing financial losses from the San Ramon bombing. Store repairs cost more than $2 million. Business interruption losses exceeded $500,000. Security upgrades at other locations added millions in expenses. The company requested full restitution from the defendant. The San Ramon Police Department calculated law enforcement costs associated with investigating the bombing and manhunt. Federal, state, and local agencies spent more than $1 million on the investigation. The FBI's Terrorist Explosive Device Analytical Center analysis alone cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. These expenses would never be recovered from the defendant. Community organizations submitted letters describing the psychological impact of the bombing on San Ramon residents. The Chamber of Commerce reported declining foot traffic at shopping centers following the attack. Mental health professionals noted increased anxiety and depression among residents. Schools provided counseling services for children traumatized by news coverage of the explosion. Federal prosecutors presented evidence about the broader South American theft group network to establish the scope of criminal activity. The 11-member crew had committed crimes in multiple states over 8 months. Their sophisticated methods and international coordination represented organized crime at the highest level. Diaz's bombing attack marked a dangerous escalation in their tactics. Immigration attorneys filed appeals challenging deportation proceedings based on potential torture or persecution Diaz might face in Chile. They argued that his cooperation with U.S. law enforcement could make him a target for criminal organizations seeking revenge. Immigration courts would need to evaluate these claims separately from criminal proceedings. The Chilean government expressed willingness to accept Diaz's deportation and cooperate with ongoing investigations. Officials provided additional intelligence about criminal recruitment networks operating in Santiago and other major cities. They implemented programs to discourage young men from joining criminal organizations targeting American victims. Defense mitigation specialists presented testimony about conditions in Chilean prisons where Diaz might serve additional time after deportation. Human rights organizations documented overcrowding, violence, and inadequate medical care in the correctional system. These conditions would constitute additional punishment beyond the U.S. federal sentence. The prosecution countered mitigation arguments by emphasizing the terrorist nature of Diaz's crimes. They presented photographs of the target store damage and chemical analysis of explosive residue. Expert testimony described how the bombing could have caused multiple deaths if timing had been different. Public safety required maximum sentences for such dangerous conduct. Federal judges throughout the district followed the Diaz case as precedent for handling international criminal networks. The Eastern District of California had become a focal point for prosecuting South American theft groups due to their concentration in major cities. Sentencing decisions would influence how other courts addressed similar cases. Legal scholars analyzed the case for academic journals and law reviews. The progression from property crime to terrorism represented a new pattern in organized criminal behavior. Traditional approaches to international crime proved inadequate for addressing explosive devices and public safety threats. New strategies and resources would be needed for prevention. The courtroom atmosphere grew tense as Judge Nunley prepared to announce his sentencing decision. Diaz sat motionless at the defense table, occasionally whispering with his attorney. Victims and law enforcement officers leaned forward to hear the judge's words. The sentence would determine not only Diaz's fate, but also send a message about American justice. At 3:17 p.m., Judge Nunley began his sentencing statement. "Mr. Arellano Diaz, you have pleaded guilty to serious federal crimes that threatened public safety and terrorized a peaceful community. Your decision to use explosive devices crossed a line from property crime to terrorism. While I acknowledge the difficult circumstances of your background, nothing justifies endangering innocent lives." The judge continued his analysis of aggravating and mitigating factors. the federal sentencing guidelines recommend 37 years imprisonment. The government seeks the maximum sentence based on the terrorism enhancement. Defense counsel argues for departure based on your personal circumstances and potential for rehabilitation. After careful consideration of all factors, this court sentences you to 32 years in federal prison. Additional components of the sentence addressed restitution and supervised release. You are ordered to pay restitution in the amount of $2,847,392 to Target Corporation and other victims. Upon release from custody, you will serve 3 years of supervised release with conditions including mental health treatment and prohibition from possessing explosive materials. Immigration proceedings will commence after completion of your federal sentence. The courtroom erupted in mixed reactions to the sentence. Victims expressed satisfaction that justice had been served, but disappointment that the term was not longer. Defense counsel indicated plans to appeal both the conviction and sentence. Prosecutors declared the outcome a victory for public safety and international law enforcement cooperation. Media coverage of the sentencing hearing focused on the terrorism aspects of the case. Local news outlets interviewed San Ramon residents about their reactions to the 32-year sentence. National media analyzed the case as part of broader immigration and border security debates. Spanish-language broadcasts in Chilean communities provided extensive coverage. The Diaz sentencing marked the end of the South American theft group prosecution, but not the broader investigation into international criminal networks. FBI agents continued tracking money flows to South America and identifying additional crew members. Immigration officials enhanced screening procedures for visa waiver program participants. Federal prison officials prepared for Diaz's arrival at a high-security facility capable of housing terrorism defendants. He would likely serve his sentence at ADX Florence or another supermax prison designed for dangerous inmates. Restrictions would limit his communications and prevent coordination with criminal associates. Chilean government officials announced enhanced cooperation with U.S. law enforcement agencies to prevent future criminal tourism. New programs would monitor young men traveling to America and investigate recruitment networks in Santiago. Diplomatic channels remained open for intelligence, sharing, and extradition procedures. The Target store in San Ramon reopened with enhanced security measures and community support programs. Corporate officials implemented upgraded surveillance systems and emergency response protocols at locations throughout California. The bombing had forced retailers nationwide to reassess vulnerabilities to terrorist attacks. Community healing in San Ramon continued months after the sentencing hearing. Counseling services remained available for residents traumatized by the explosion. Local government officials enhanced emergency preparedness and police training. The sense of safety would take years to fully restore. Federal prosecutors used the Diaz case as a model for training programs about international organized crime. The investigation techniques, evidence collection methods, and prosecution strategies became standard procedures for similar cases. Law enforcement agencies throughout the country adopted protocols developed during the South American theft group investigation. Defense attorneys studying the case noted the challenges of representing clients involved in terrorism-related crimes. Mitigation arguments based on background and circumstances proved less effective when explosive devices threatened public safety. New approaches would be needed for defending international criminals facing terrorism charges. As Diego Arellano Diaz began serving his 32-year federal sentence, the ripple effects of his crimes continued to impact communities throughout California. Families of theft crew victims struggled with ongoing trauma and financial losses. Law enforcement agencies enhanced training and resource allocation for terrorism prevention. Immigration policy underwent review and reform. The case demonstrated how individual criminal choices could escalate into international incidents affecting thousands of lives. Diaz's progression from poverty in Chile to bombing attacks in America illustrated the complex factors driving modern organized crime. Prevention would require addressing root causes, including poverty, opportunity, and criminal recruitment. The grief that had defined the story from its beginning persisted long after the courtroom proceedings ended. Victims would carry emotional scars for the rest of their lives. Communities would remember the fear and vulnerability they had experienced. Families in Chile would suffer the consequences of their relatives' criminal choices. Justice had been served, but the human cost would never be fully repaid. The federal courthouse in Sacramento returned to its normal routine of processing criminal cases. But the Diaz prosecution would be remembered as a watershed moment in combating international terrorism. The 32-year sentence sent a clear message that explosive devices would not be tolerated in American communities. The investigation techniques would serve as a model for future cases involving organized criminal networks. The target bombing in San Ramon had evolved from a property crime into a terrorism case that changed how America addressed international criminal threats. The successful prosecution demonstrated the power of cooperation between federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies. The sentence provided closure for victims while serving as a deterrent to future attacks. But the grief and trauma would linger in the community's memory forever.